My recommendation to religious groups is to prepare to be kicked off campus and try to work within a system that, frankly, is systemically discriminating against religious people.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Thank you for joining us. Our guest today is Robert Shibley, Executive Director of the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, or FIRE. We're going to continue a discussion we began last week about ways we can help protect and promote the freedom of speech of students on our college and university campuses. We'll also talk specifically about how North Carolina is doing to protect student speech. Robert, welcome back to Family Policy Matters.
Thanks very much for having me.
UNC Chapel Hill, I know back in 2011, FIRE was involved in a case where a religious student group on campus was investigated for dismissing a student who would no longer adhere to the group's beliefs concerning homosexuality. Tell us a little bit about that case and how it was resolved.
Well, that was the Psalm 100 case. Psalm 100 is an explicitly Christian a cappella group at UNC Chapel Hill. I don't know if it's still in existence, but it certainly was at the time. To be part of the group, you had to share this group's statement of beliefs, which were a pretty conventional set of Christian beliefs, one of which is that you shouldn't have sex outside of heterosexual marriage. They had a student who was in the group who had come to the group and said he believed that, and then he came to leadership and said, you know what, I'm gay and I can't say that I believe this anymore. I have to leave. They ended up voting to dismiss him from the group. Apparently, it was a very sad time. Everybody was upset about it, but they felt like they had to. And then he actually changed his mind and said, well, actually, while I am gay, I think I can still live this out. So they voted to readmit him to the group. And then he one more time said, well, actually, I don't think I can do it. And then they voted to dismiss him again. At that point, the university got involved and decided that it was going to investigate Psalm 100 for discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. We're actually seeing this, and this is an increasing problem across the country, and thankfully not so far at UNC Chapel Hill, where colleges are saying that student groups have to accept any student as a member, regardless of whether or not they actually share the beliefs of the group. And unfortunately, back in 2012, the Supreme Court actually gave its seal of approval to a form of this, what they call all-comers policies. And so we are increasingly seeing Christian groups that do require beliefs for membership or leadership kicked off of campuses. I think most prominently the California State University system has a rule like that, and Vanderbilt, I think, is actually the most prominent school that kicked off 13 Christian student groups because they wouldn't agree that their leaders could have any old beliefs, and they've made that stick.
Well, being a Tar Heel myself, I was encouraged to hear the UNC Chapel Hill has been rated a green light. What is UNC Chapel Hill doing well that other universities in the state could learn from?
Well, the main thing that distinguished UNC Chapel Hill was after years and years of going back and forth with FIRE about their policies, we actually have had more cases and by FIRE. When we say cases, we mean sort of incidents that come to FIRE, not necessarily legal cases.
Right, right.
But we've had more cases with UNC Chapel Hill than with many, many other schools. It used to be a sort of a Christmas tradition for us, as a matter of fact. I think two or three years in a row, Chapel Hill would make a blunder, and we would have to call them on it around the Christmas season. But I guess the leadership has changed, and maybe attitudes have changed a little bit as well. Now we're really happy that the current people in office there have come to FIRE and decided to work with us instead of running over and over right up against the Constitution. And so that's really, FIRE, we actually employ two full-time attorneys, from an Ivy League school, just to work with colleges and universities for free, of course, to change their policies. FIRE is a charity. There's a lot of people out there. There's actually a whole industry of folks who charge a lot of money to try to work on university policies. We do it for free. And we try to get you compliant with the Constitution. And so we're always looking for more schools to do that. And I would invite any school at the University of North Carolina system or a private school to call us up, and we're happy to work with you.
Well, and in North Carolina, I know that a few years ago, the General Assembly enacted some laws to protect student speech, including the passage of, at the time, Senate Bill 719, which clarifies that religious and political student groups at the state's public colleges and universities can actually limit their leadership to students who are committed to the group's mission or faith. How important do you believe legislation like this is to protect student speech?
Well, you know, FIRE actually believes that the Supreme Court wrongly decided the CLS versus Martinez case. And before that case came down, we would have said we don't think legislation is necessary. We think that that's a freestanding constitutional right, the right of freedom of association. Unfortunately, Supreme Court doesn't agree with us. We don't believe they're right. But I think legislation is now really the only alternative to make certain that that sort of thing is going to happen. Obviously, you could have schools that make that decision on their own, and I think, and many of them still do, but they are going to continue to come under pressure to change those to these all-comers policies. And, you know, what's particularly objectionable, actually, about the all-comers policies is that they're actually not all-comers policies. The Supreme Court approved policies that said, hey, every group has to take every student who wants to be involved, regardless of belief, regardless of, you know, any other characteristic. But almost no school actually has that. For instance, Vanderbilt says it has an all-comers policy, but somehow, mystifyingly, fraternities and sororities are exempted from it, as are honor societies. That's not what the Supreme Court said. They didn't say, you know, we're against all discrimination unless it's by fraternities and sororities against, you know, people of the opposite gender or sex. So I think those schools are on pretty thin ground, although I haven't seen, you know, a real challenge. There have been some challenges to it. I don't think there's been any definitive, and certainly not at the Supreme Court level. But the trend is definitely going in the wrong direction there. I think my recommendation to religious groups is to prepare to be kicked off campus and prepare to try to work within a system that, frankly, is systemically discriminating against religious people.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
Robert, I know that FIRE also worked with North Carolina lawmakers to enact another important law in 2013 that guarantees college students a right to an attorney. Tell us about that law, which I believe may have been the first of its kind in the nation, and why that's important.
That's right. The Student Administration Equality Act was passed a couple of years ago to protect students who are being brought in front of those university tribunals I was talking about, whether it be for speech, whether it be for anything else, and denied the ability to have any kind of real representation there. Most universities in other states still don't allow a lawyer to participate in these hearings. And you might say, well, that seems like overkill. Why would a student need a lawyer for that? And that's actually the argument we hear a lot in opposition to it. But what people don't really understand is that universities are hearing extremely serious offenses. Obviously, sexual assault on campus is a big issue right now. Campuses are holding rape trials. They are holding trials to determine whether or not somebody is sexually assaulted another person. And then they're claiming that, well, these are just academic. These are just academic sanctions, even though being expelled and declared a rapist and having that put on your transcript or your records pretty much seals your fate if you want to get any more education and frankly, you know, a huge variety of jobs. It is a career ruiner. And yet universities are saying that you should have almost no rights when that happens. You shouldn't have the right to an attorney. You don't have the right not to incriminate yourself. You don't have the right, in many cases, even to question the person who is accusing you. You just have to sit there, and you're not allowed to poke any holes in their story. So North Carolina acted, and the legislature acted, to guarantee the right to counsel for students. And while that doesn't solve everything, it's not a panacea, at least there'll be somebody in the room who's a professional who knows what they're doing, or at least they'll have a chance to get that and to say, hey, you know what, this isn't a fair trial, or, you know, you're forgetting this particular thing. And that's why, you know, lawyers get a bad rap, but they are experts at, you know, trying to figure out how to run a court. And that's what these campuses are doing. They might like to pretend they're not, but they are. This isn't a plagiarism trial. This can be a sexual assault trial. This can be underage drinking. These are crimes. that they're adjudicating. And there's also the added complication that in many cases, since they are crimes, everything they say in front of that tribunal can be introduced in a real court. So they've effectively been stripped of their Fifth Amendment rights.
Wow. Well, Robert, I know many of our listeners may recall that a few years ago, North Carolina was also the focus of a high-profile case dealing with academic freedom, this one concerning conservative professor Dr. Mike Adams at UNC Wilmington. Now, Dr. Adams sued the university for retaliating against him for his political viewpoints that he expressed in columns that he wrote for non-university publications. He won that case, and it received national attention. Tell us about that win and what it means for academic freedom on campus, not only at UNC Wilmington, but also nationwide.
Well, Mike Adams's case was really a disgraceful attempt by the University of North Carolina Wilmington administration to, do very blatant ideological policing of faculty members. And actually, that case may have started in 2004, but actually continued until a couple of years ago because of all of the appeals and everything else. So Mike Adams didn't actually get finished going through, the entire process for, I think, 8 or 9 years.
Right.
Now,
right.
That's the sort of thing that can happen. And the reason it became an issue, a particularly big issue, is because of another Supreme Court decision that I think is has had some deleterious effects on academic freedom, and that's called the Garcetti decision. And in that decision, the Supreme Court determined that basically that the as an employer, the government has the right to regulate speech that's not on an issue of public concern. It's sort of hard to follow and understand, but the important thing to remember about Garcetti is that the groups like FIRE who weighed in on this case in the amicus area, so they went to the Supreme Court while they were deciding it and said, you need to worry about these things on the side, said this could be a real problem with professors because they're supposed to, they're state employees, but they're supposed to speak out on things that are in their expertise. And we expect them to do that, which is what Mike Adams was doing. So there was actually a footnote in the Garcetti decision saying, this may not apply to professors, but we don't have to decide that now, so we're not going to. So different circuits are coming to different conclusions about whether or not these restrictions apply to professors or not. Thankfully, Mike Adams' case is probably the leading case, and it's here in the Fourth Circuit, saying that professors, in fact, shouldn't be bound by Garcetti, but their speech should be evaluated under another test. So that's going to be, I think if ultimately this probably will go to the Supreme Court, and I think Mike Adams' case will be an important precedent in that case.
Well, finally, Robert, if a student, professor, or other staff person on a college or university campus feels that their academic freedom or free speech rights have been infringed upon, what would you recommend that they do?
Visit FIRE's website at thefire.org. And submit a case or question. There's a big button on the website where you can do that. We handle hundreds and hundreds of cases and questions a year from people all over the place. And FIRE defends not just free speech and academic freedom, but also due process. So that's like the right to fair trial type of thing, religious liberty, and freedom of conscience more generally. And so if anybody, students or faculty, have questions, please visit thefire.org. We may have answers for you on the website, and if not, please submit a case or a question to us, and we'll try to help.
Well, great. We definitely want our listeners to take advantage of that if this is an issue that's of concern to you. Again, that website is thefire.org. Again, thefire.org. And if you visit that website, you can also review the report that we've been talking about on FIRE's ranking of colleges and universities across the country and specifically in North Carolina. And with that, Robert Shibley, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us this week on Family Policy Matters to talk about academic freedom on college campuses and for your important work defending free speech rights for students, professors, and other staff on campuses nationwide.
Well, thank you for having me.
Before we close, I'd like to invite you to follow the North Carolina Family Policy Council on Facebook. Just log in and find us at ncfamily.org. Again, at ncfamily.org. Be sure to like us when you visit. In addition, for instant updates on pro-family news of interest, follow us on Twitter at ncfamily.org. Again, that's at ncfamily.org.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.